we present The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler, dramatized in three parts by Bill Morrison, starring Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe with Robert Beatty as General Sternwood. The Big Sleep, Part One. California, 1939.
Will you wait a moment, please?
Sure.
It was 11 o'clock in the morning in mid-October, with the sun not shining and a look of rain. I was standing in the hallway of the Sternwood place. Over the entrance doors, which would have let in a troop of elephants, there was a stained glass panel showing a knight in dark armor rescuing a lady who was tied to a tree. She had no clothes on, but she had some very long and convenient hair. He was fiddling with her knots and not getting anywhere. If I lived in this house, I would sooner or later have to climb up there and help him. He didn't seem to be really trying. I waited for the butler to come back. I was wearing my powder blue suit with dark blue shirt, tie and display handkerchief, black brogues, and black wool socks with dark blue clocks on them. I was neat, clean, shaved, and sober. I was everything a well-dressed private detective ought to be. I was calling on $4 million.
You are tall, aren't you?
I didn't mean to be.
Handsome, too. And I bet you know it. What's your name?
Riley. Doghouse Riley.
What are you, a prize fighter?
Not exactly. I'm a sleuth.
You're making fun of me.
Uh-huh.
What?
You heard me.
You're just a big tease. You're awfully tall. Oh. Nice.
What if I hadn't caught you?
You always would. You're cute. I'm cute, too.
General Sternwood will see you now in the conservatory.
Excuse me.
Anytime. Bye.
Who is that?
The General's younger daughter, Miss Carmen, sir.
You ought to wean her. She looks old enough. I'll lead on.
General, this is Mr. Philip Marlowe.
How do you like your brandy, sir?
Any way at all.
Bring brandy.
Yes, sir.
Sit down. If you may take your coat off. It's too hot in here for a man with blood in his veins. You are looking at a very dull survival of a rather gaudy life, a cripple in a chair. There's very little I can eat, and my sleep is so close to waking that it's hardly worth the name. I seem to exist largely on heat, like a newborn spider. And these orchids are an excuse for the heat. You like orchids?
Not particularly.
You may smoke. I like the smell of tobacco. I have to indulge my vices by proxy.
I'll blow it around.
Orchids are nasty things. Their flesh is too much like the flesh of men. Brandy, I'll watch you drink it.
Thanks.
Tell me about yourself, Mr. Marlowe. I suppose I have the right to ask.
Sure. Well, there's not much to tell. I'm 33 years old, went to college once, and can still speak English if there's any demand for it. I worked for the district attorney as an investigator once, which is how you reached me. I'm unmarried because I don't like policemen's wives.
You didn't like working for the district attorney?
I was fired. I test very high on insubordination, General.
I'm glad to hear it. Always did myself. What do you know about my family?
I'm told you are a widower with a couple of daughters still in the dangerous 20s. One was married 3 times, the last to an ex-bootlegger named Rusty Regan. That's all.
Did any of this strike you as peculiar?
I always got along with bootleggers myself.
I'm very fond of Rusty. He was the breath of life to me while he lasted. He used to spend hours here, sweating like a pig, drinking brandy by the quart, telling stories of his time in the Irish Revolution. Ridiculous marriage, of course. He went away a month ago without a word. Meantime, I'm being blackmailed again. I would have been sorry for anyone who tried that while Rusty was around.
You said again.
Yes, about 10 months ago, I paid a man named Joe Brody $5,000 to let my younger daughter, Carmen, alone. Now, look in this envelope. This is the new demand.
Three promissory notes for $1,000 each, signed by Carmen, to Arthur Gwynn Geiger. I see he deals in rare books. And he admits their gambling debt, but wants you to honor them. Who is this Geiger?
I haven't the faintest idea.
What does Carmen say?
If I asked her, she only suck her thumb.
General, do I have to be polite, or can I just be natural?
I haven't noticed that you suffer from many inhibitions.
Do the two girls run around together?
I think not. I think they go their separate and slightly divergent roads to perdition. Carmen is a child who likes to pull the wings off flies. Vivian is smart. Neither has the moral sense of a cat. Nor have I, for that matter. I presume they have all the usual vices. I need not add that a man who indulges in parenthood for the first time at the age of 54 deserves all he gets. Your conclusions?
I'd pay.
Why?
It's a question of a little money against a lot of annoyance.
I have pride, sir.
Well, I can take this Geiger off your back if that's what you want. It may cost a little, and it won't get you anything. There's more behind this. You're on their list.
A moment ago, you said pay. And now you say it won't get me anything.
Do your daughters have money of their own?
No, sir. Oh, Carmen is still a minor. I give them generous allowances.
Then this sort of thing will happen again. It might be easier to stand for a certain amount of squeeze.
I'm a rather impatient man, Mr. Marlowe. What are your charges?
I get 25 a day in expenses when I'm lucky.
It seems reasonable enough for removing...
A deal with this Geiger if he turns out within hooting distance of being on the level?
The matter is now in your hands.
Well, I'll take him out. He'll think a bridge fell on him.
I'm sure you will. Now, excuse me. I'm tired.
I left him among his orchids, which had stalks like the newly washed fingers of dead men. The butler told me Vivian, Mrs. Rusty Regan, wanted to see me. When I saw her, I wanted to see more of her. She was tall, rangy, black-haired, black-eyed. She was trouble. Her knees were dimpled, not sharp. She laid out the melodic line of her legs on the couch for me to stare at. I stared.
So, you're a private detective. I didn't know they existed outside of cheap books.
I do.
How did you like Dad?
I liked him.
He liked Rusty. I suppose you know who Rusty is.
Uh-huh.
Rusty was Irish. Earthy and vulgar at times, but he was very real. And he was a lot of fun for Dad. Rusty shouldn't have gone off like that. Dad feels very badly about it, although he won't say so. Or did he?
He said something about it.
You're not much of a gusher, are you, Mr. Morrow? But he wants to find Rusty, doesn't he?
Yes and no.
It's hardly an answer. Do you think you can find him?
Why not try the Missing Persons Bureau?
Dad wouldn't hear of the police being brought in. How will you go about finding him?
How and when did he skip out?
Didn't Dad tell you?
You tell me.
I don't see what there is to be cagey about. And I don't like your manners, Marlowe.
Well, I'm not crazy about yours, Mrs. Regan. I didn't ask to see you. You sent for me. I don't mind you ritzy me or drinking your lunch out of a scotch bottle. I don't mind you showing me your legs. It's a pleasure to make their acquaintance. I don't mind if you don't like my manners. As a matter of fact, I grieve over them during the long winter evenings. But don't waste your time trying to cross-examine me.
People don't talk to me like that. I ought to throw a Buick at you.
Just what exactly is it you're afraid of, Mrs. Regan?
God, I loathe masterful men. I simply loathe them. Dad didn't want you about that, about Rusty going off, did he?
When did Regan go?
A month ago, one afternoon, we just drove away without saying a word. They found the car in a private garage somewhere.
Who's they?
Ah, so Dad didn't tell you.
The general told me about Mr. Regan, but that wasn't what he wanted to see me about. Is that what you're trying to get me to say?
I'm sure I don't care what you say.
Then I'll be running along. I have a date with a bookshop.
Don't try to kid me. You can read, Marlowe.
I did a little research into rare books in the public library, then walked into Geiger's store onto a thick blue rug that paved the floor from wall to wall. The blonde behind the desk got up slowly and swayed towards me in a tight black dress that didn't reflect any light. She walked with a certain something I hadn't often seen in bookstores. It was time to act.
Can I help you?
Say, would you happen to have a Ben-Hur of 1860?
A first edition?
Third. The one with the erratum on page 116.
Oh, well, I'm afraid not. Not at the moment.
How about a Chevalier Audubon 1840? The full set, of course.
Well, you do
deal in rare books.
Well, what do you think is on the shelves? Grapefruit?
Oh, that sort of thing hardly interests me. They're just the usual vulgarity.
Oh, well, Mr. Geiger's not in at the moment.
Might he be in later?
Not till very late.
Oh, too bad. Well, I'll just sit down and wait in one of these charming chairs. I have rather a blank afternoon. Nothing to think about but my trigonometry lesson.
What? Yeah, oh, yes. Can I help you, sir? Oh, yes. Will you wait just a moment, sir, and Carl will attend to you. Carl!
Yes? Oh, I see you want to exchange something, sir. Something more to your satisfaction. Would you like to step into the back room, sir? Not everything we have in stock is on show here.
Is that so?
Are you an established customer, sir?
Oh, what do you have to do to get established?
Well, Agnes can deal with you. Oh, well, just go ahead, sir. In the back here, sir.
When the customer came out of the back room, he had a new parcel. I followed him and took it off him. He didn't object. I opened it. It was just what I expected. Silk. In and out dates stamped in the front. A book rented from a lending library of elaborate smut. It seemed set to rain all day. I bought myself a pint of whiskey just to keep me warm and interested, and sat in my heap and watched the very nice cars stop and the nice-looking people go into Geiger's. They were not all men. A racket like that, out in the open, on the boulevard, seemed to mean plenty of protection. A lady in another bookstore had given me a description of Geiger. It seemed he looked like Charlie Chan with a glass eye. He wasn't too hard to recognize when he came out. He said an affectionate farewell to his boyfriend, Carl, and drove to his home on Laurel Canyon Drive. I followed him and sat, drinking my whiskey and waiting. Pretty soon, he had a visitor. It was Carmen Sternberg. She stayed there a long time. It seemed like a nice, quiet neighborhood to have bad habits in. I got to the house as quick as I could, but I wasn't quick enough.
Carmen. Carmen, what happened? What have you been drinking?
Ether? What dope is it, Carmen? Laudanum? The modeling session is over. Somebody shot your fag photographer. Mr. Geiger is very dead. Now let's look at the camera. No plate. That's not a development I like. Carmen, who did it? Carmen! 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 Come on, Carmen. let's be nice. Let's put something on beside your earrings. Let's take a little walk. Carmen, I've seen naked girls before. You all have them in the same place. Now, come on, get up. All I want to do is wrap you in your coat. Don't be cute. I'll take a nice little walk. You're going home. I took her there in her car and left her with her maid. Then I walked back, past lighted windows in big gables, like witch houses in a forest. On a night like that, you could grow a beard waiting for a taxi, and taxi drivers remember. The body was gone. It wasn't the law. They would have still been there. And it wasn't the killer. He had left too fast. But it gave me time to find out if I could tell the story, leaving Carmen out. I found a blue book with a list. I took it home and drank too much trying to crack the code Geiger had used for his rich clients.
Yeah?
How's the boy?
I got a hangover, Bernie.
Tut, tut. Done any little jobs for General Sternwood yet?
Why would the DA's chief investigator wish to know that?
Because a big Buick registered to him is washing about in the surf of Lido Fishpier.
Just the car?
There's a guy inside it.
Is it Rusty Regan?
What would he be doing down there?
Quit stalling, Bernie.
To tell the truth, I don't know, pal. I'm dropping down to Luke C. Do you want to go along?
Yeah.
Then snap it up.
Know him?
It's not Regan.
Why your interest in him? What made him skip out?
Habit.
When a guy out of the liquor traffic marries a rich and pretty dame, and then waves goodbye to her and 2 million legitimate bucks, that makes even me think.
I'm not looking for Regan.
Uh-huh. Well, it looks like this kid was sapped on the side of the head, then somebody pointed the car down the pier. About 10 last night. They can tell by the way the tide moved him. No witnesses? Hardly worth the ride down.
He's Sternwood's chauffeur. Uh-huh. Do they know about it?
Not yet.
I'll talk to the older daughter. Leave the old man out of it if you can. He has enough troubles and he's sick.
I'll try. But this will give the paper something. They haven't had a killing for days.
I went back to Geiger's bookshop. The blonde was edgy. The books were being moved out of the back room. I hung around and followed the truck which delivered to an apartment block, apartment 405. Occupier, a Mr. Joseph Brody, recipient those months ago of 5,000 of the General's greenest. I went back to my office. I had a reception room which I always left unlocked in case I had a client and the client cared to sit and wait. I had a client. The client had dimpled knees.
Well, Marlowe, so you do get up. I was beginning to think perhaps you worked in bed like Marcel Proust.
Who's he?
A French writer who was a connoisseur of degenerates.
Oh, I wouldn't know him.
You don't put up much of a front.
You can't make much money at this trade if you're honest. If you have a front, you're making money, or expect to.
Are you honest?
Painfully.
How did you ever get into this slimy business, then?
How did you come to marry a bootlegger?
Let's not start quarreling again. I've been trying to get you on the phone all morning.
About your chauffeur.
So, you know about him.
Did you use the Buick last night?
No, I was playing the tables at Eddie Marr's club at Las Olindas. He had no permission to take the car. Poor kid. He was in love with Carmen. You don't get much of that in our circle.
And she played him along?
Oh, that was long ago.
Anything else about him?
He had a police record. He didn't know the right people. That's all a police record means in this rotten, crime-ridden country. Now, I didn't come to talk about him. Can you tell me yet what my father wanted to see you about?
Not without his permission.
Was it about Carmen?
I can't even say that.
Take a look at this photograph. I got it by messenger this morning.
Carmen looks a little doped.
They want 5,000 for the negative, or they give the stuff to a scandal sheet.
They?
I don't know. Some woman telephoned me after this was delivered.
There's nothing in the scandal sheet angle. The law would protect you. What else?
Does there have to be something else?
Yes.
Well, she said there was a police jam connected. I don't know what kind.
Where's Carmen now?
At home, in bed. Her maid says she was sick last night. I was out losing my shirt at a roulette wheel.
What was the chauffeur doing last night with your car?
You think he was involved in this?
I don't rule him out. Can you get the 5,000 in cash right away?
Not Unless I tell Dad.
We'll borrow it back from Eddie Morris.
I might. How about telling the police?
Oh, that's a very good idea, but you won't do it.
Won't I?
You have to protect your father and your little sister. The cops might turn up something they couldn't sit on, though they try in blackmail cases.
Can you do anything?
I think I can. But I can't tell you how.
I like you. You believe in miracles. Would you have a drink in the office?
Sure.
I'll get the $5,000. I've been a good customer of Eddie Mars. Besides, we have something else in common. The lady Rusty ran off with was Eddie Mars' wife. Doesn't that interest you?
Cheers.
You're the hardest guy to get anything out of. You don't even move your ears.
Well, you've got what you want. A pretty good idea that I'm not looking for your husband.
Rusty was no crook. He always carried 15,000 cash on him. He called it his mad money. He wouldn't need to blackmail. I'll take the photo. She has a beautiful little body, hasn't she?
Uh-huh.
You ought to see mine.
Can it be arranged?
You're as cold-blooded as ever I met, Marlowe. Or can I call you Philip?
Sure.
You can call me Vivian.
Thanks, Mrs. Regan.
Oh, go to hell, Marlowe.
I didn't know just how close I wanted to get to her. Even being the chauffeur had proved terminal. By now, it was late afternoon. None of the early editions of the evening papers mentioned Geiger. I went back to his house. And who should I meet there but Carmen? She stood among all the fag junk and the stink of last night's filth, sucking her thumb. A pretty, spoiled, and not very bright little girl who had gone very, very wrong, and nobody was doing anything about it. To hell with the rich. They made me sick.
Hello.
What are you doing here? How much do you remember last night?
I was sick last night. Why, at home.
Hell, you were. You remember. Before I took you home, you remember spreading yourself in that chair.
Are you the police?
No, I'm a friend of your father's.
Oh, what do you want?
Who killed Geiger? You were here.
Who else knows?
I don't know. Whoever took the body. Joe Brody, maybe.
Joe Brody? Him?
Did Brody kill him?
Kill who?
Christ.
Yes, Joe did it.
Why?
I don't know.
Seen much of him lately?
I hate him.
Are you willing to tell the police it was Joe Brody if I can kill the nude photo angle? The photo's gone, if that's what you came back here for. Probably Brody took it with him.
I hate him.
Carmen, this is a spot for a little old-fashioned simplicity. You're not kidding me about Brody?
No.
Okay. You don't give it another thought. Don't tell a soul you were here, not even Vivian. Just leave it to Riley.
Your name isn't Riley. Vivian told me. I have to go home now.
Shh.
Excuse the casual entrance. Is Geiger around?
No, we don't know just where he is.
Uh-huh. Your friends of his?
Business acquaintances. We drop by for a book.
A book, huh?
We'll trot along now.
Any message if Geiger comes back?
We won't bother you.
But you do, soldier. The girl can dust. I'd like to talk to you a little.
I don't think we've anything to talk about.
A kidder. I have two boys out in my car that always do just what I want them to. Goodbye, sister.
Oh, yeah. Bye.
There's something wrong around here. Look, let's you and me look around. No plate in the camera. I get the picture. What's that?
A rug.
Move it. Blood. A lot of blood.
Does the gun make you feel better?
I think we'll have some law.
It's old blood. Dried blood.
Just, who in the hell are you, soldier?
Marlowe is the name. I'm a sleuth.
Never heard of you. Who was the girl?
A client. Geiger was trying a little blackmail. We came to talk it over. He wasn't here. The door was open.
Convenient.
Why would I have a key? Why do you have a key?
I own this house. Geiger's my tenant.
You know such lovely people.
I take them as they come. I think we'll have some law.
Go ahead. Call your friends downtown. Call the buttons. You'll get a big reaction from it.
I don't get your game here.
Maybe it just isn't your day. I know you. You're Eddie Mars. You run a club at Las Olindas, a flash gambling club for flash people. All through Prohibition, it was a nightclub, and there were two uniformed cops in the lobby every night to see that the guests didn't bring their own liquor instead of buying it from the house. Those good old days are gone, but the local law is still in your pocket with a well-greased line right into the city department. Protection. Geiger was in a racket which needed it, too. Maybe you spared him some, seeing he was your tenant.
Geiger was in what racket?
The smut book racket.
I didn't find him at the store today. I came up to see about it. I find blood, you, and the girl. I think that's the story. You got to him.
You missed something. All his rental books were moved out of the store today.
Hey, you get around. I should have thought of that, soldier. All right, talk.
I'm not ready. But whoever moved the books knows what's what, and I have a guess about that.
Who?
That's the part I'm not ready to give out. I have a client to protect. I expected you would know the girl.
No. Now, who got the book, Seamus?
Why should I tell you?
I might make it worth your while.
I can always hear the sound of money.
For doing what?
What did you want done?
Now, listen, soldier. I asked you a question, and you asked me another. Now, we're not getting anywhere. I've got my own reasons for wanting to find Geiger. I don't see any cops here, so either you don't know anything or you aren't telling them. I think you might need a little protection yourself.
You're right. If I knew anything, I'd have to tell the cops. So, I've nothing to sell. So, with your permission, I'll drift.
A kidder.
By the way, how is Mrs. Mars these days?
Beat it. I don't give a damn what you know or where you go or what you do when you get there. Only take a word of advice, soldier. You leave me out of your plans or you'll wish your name was Murphy and you lived in Limerick.
I hear you and she had a pal came from around there, name of Regan.
What?
It's all right. I'm on my way.
It was just a question. The fact that there was a connection between Eddie Mars and Rusty Regan was none of my business. Nobody had asked me to look for Regan. I was looking for a lost corpse. And somebody had the plate out of the camera. And somebody had the books. Maybe Joe Brody had the answers.
That was part one of The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler. Dramatized for radio by Bill Morrison, with Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe. Production for the BBC was by John Tiedemann.